Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody.
You are listening to Live Up to Freedom Radio, hosted by Annie Cyrus.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Live Up to Freedom Radio. I'm your host, Annie Cyrus. Thank you so much for joining us today. And please make sure to share this link wherever you're listening in from. Just share the Blog Talk Radio link and invite your friends to listen in, because, as always, these are important topics that everybody should know about. Also, if you have any questions for our special guests, you can use the chat room here or the chat room on Facebook, or also you can call in. The number to call in is 516-453-9075. Then press 1 if you want to come on air with your questions. So when you do press 1, I know you are waiting to come on. That being said, before I bring on our very, very, very special guest today, I just want to quickly say, just in case, if you have missed it due to social media shadow banning or censorship, please do go to liveuptofreedom.com. That's liveuptofreedom.com. I have put out few new videos on important topics, but the most important one that was released a few days ago that is on my website is about the situation with Taliban. And I promise I will continue covering that situation as it develops. But for now, make sure to go to liveuptofreedom.com and watch that video and share it with everybody, because somebody's going to have to tell the truth. And those of you who know me, well, you know, that's what I do all day long. And with that being said, it is such a privilege to have Dave Sheldon with us today. He's an award-winning film and TV writer, cartoonist, author, musician, and a voice actor who is a Republican, a Trump supporter, and because of that, he has been attacked by Hollywood, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and many other leftist groups. He has moved to West Virginia and decided to do the right thing, which is running for a state delegate in West Virginia as a Republican. Hello, Dave, and welcome to the program.
Hi, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, my privilege. I've been, unfortunately, we had to reschedule this radio program, but I've been looking forward to having you on. Let's just start from here. Dave, tell our audience a little bit about you and your background, and we go from there.
Okay, I'm originally from New Jersey, and it's funny you say that we were delayed, and it actually worked out better because my incest attitude about things have just been like tenfold intensified because of what happened in Afghanistan this week. So we'll talk about that. But my background is I was raised in New Jersey. I went to the University of Florida, studied film, went to New York, studied animation at the New School, then started working at MTV, Nickelodeon. I was a writer for Tiger Beat and Rockbill magazines. Then I started working for a lot of different celebrities, like Tim Allen, working on his HBO special, and then book on stand-up comedy. And then I got an opportunity to come to L.A., and I moved there in 1990, where I worked with Robert Wall as well. And then I got to hook up with National Lampoon, which was kind of a dream for me, because when I was in college, Animal House came out, and I said, you know, and I always read the National Lampoon magazine, and I said, someday I'm going to work for that company. And then, sure enough, God opened the door, and there was an opportunity, and I took it, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. I worked there for 8 years, and I've always been politically incorrect. I mean, you know, between Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein and laughing, you know, everything that just pushed the envelope of, I guess you can say, upsetting people in a comedic way. And growing, I grew up, my parents were atheists, but all my relatives were Jewish and Italian. So police, I think they were Italian. They all told me that they love pizza, but we're descended from Vlad the, we're descended from Vlad the Impaler on my mom's side, which is the inspiration for Dracula. So I've always embraced that. So anyway, when I was at National Lampoon, that was a dream come true. I worked there as a head writer and head of cartoons, and I put out tons of stuff there. And then I got an opportunity to work at Everybody Loves Raymond, and I was doing some writing there, and I created all the Hacky Doo characters for a very popular episode there, and I worked on other episodes. Then once I left that, I just started producing my own stuff because everyone else was making a fortune on theirs. I said, you know, I've always been creative. I've had children's books out. I put out a collection of all my work at National Lampoon. And all through this, with all the things that I've worked on, all the things, I was also an animator. I worked as a cartoonist at Disney. I worked as a cartoonist at Klasky Supo with the Rugrats, doing some penciling there. But then I went on and worked on some of their other projects. So, and then I worked at Consumer Products for Tweety and Sylvester, doing drawings for their products. But I've had stuff all over the world. And then I thought, I've always been politically incorrect, but I've always been a conservative. I did for a minute support Bill Clinton at the beginning during his election because I hadn't vetted him as much as I should have. So, but then I became aware of it. And I'm a really good judge of character. So I can always tell when someone is full of crap. And you can tell. And in Hollywood, you have to if you want to survive. And as you mentioned, ever since Trump went, you know, even was nominated or even threw his hat into the ring, I knew I was going to support him because I've always liked Donald Trump, not only being a New Yorker, but he always spoke his mind, and I like that. And he has never, ever, ever not been upfront about things. And I appreciate someone who is like that. Hollywood's full of deception. And, you know, I got, that's one of the reasons I moved out of California is because of that. And like you said, yes, I was attacked. When Trump's star was destroyed the first time, I was there on Hollywood Boulevard, and that was one of the first times I got attacked by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Fortunately, there were some Hollywood cops who did kind of stand up for us, but I was just throwing sarcasm back at them and stuff, and NBC recorded it. I don't know if they ever aired the news footage, but, you know, then I got involved with this organization called Friends of Abe. You might be familiar with it. It was started by Clint Eastwood, Gary Sinise, I believe, and it was kind of like a secret Republican organization to kind of strategize as to what's, you know, what they can do to stop liberals and the destruction of our country, the removal of our republic, and to stop the deception, because that's pretty much what's going on. So, yes, a lot of my friends who are conservative, there are conservative actors and people in Hollywood, but just like blacklisting of the 50s, they are so afraid to speak up. And, yes, it's probably cost me some jobs, but, you know, I'm doing my own thing, and I don't really care. I'm right now in a place that there's a lot of conservatives. Of course, there's, you know, people are moving around the country, and of course, there's some liberals that kind of filter in. But, you know, I feel really comfortable here, and I could be so creative. Since I've been here, I produced a film festival. I have a new children's book out that won 2 awards already. I worked on some short films. I've written a bunch of scripts. I'm adapting some of my other stuff in the feature films. And I'm working with some people in Pittsburgh. And I just did the Steel City Con in Monroeville, signing my books. And there's huge amounts of fans there that were Lampoon fans, which was great. And I got to meet a lot of other people who were kind of on our side. My reason for running for delegate, like you said, is not just because of the need to and keep the MAGA movement going, because I'm in a pretty much red state, even though it's funny because we have Joe Manchin as our senator, and he is probably in our small state because everyone always makes fun of West Virginia, and half the people in California and New York don't even know where West Virginia is. So they think, oh, you moved to Virginia, what part? Oh, the west part of Virginia? And I'm going like, yes, except that it's a state. If you count the other 49, there's one missing. It's West Virginia. So I was like, okay, people were kind of getting neglected here. And, you know, a lot of the local people, I actually came out to also write for a newspaper here as an investigative reporter. When that contract ended, I loved it and I stayed. And that's when I interviewed some of the other people who were running for Senate and for delegate here. And they kind of look, I made one guy, David Kelly, who I'm going to be running against in the primaries, the incumbent, nervous because he goes, do you work for the Washington Post? And I go, no, why? He goes, because you're asking me harder questions than anyone in West Virginia media ever did. And I go, well, good. You know, I've worked for national things and I want to put pressure. If you're going to help people in your district, which you're not, then you need to be held accountable for it. So that's one of the reasons why I decided to run. I mean, I don't know where it's going to lead, but it just, I'm always someone who's always done something and never just hesitated where people go, oh, I'll get around to it tomorrow or I'll get around to it next week. I have never been that way. I never take things for granted, and I'm always, always, always doing something. And you know what? Maybe it's being from New Jersey. I don't care. I speak my mind, but being honest is a lot better than being deceitful. That's why I love Clint Eastwood and Kurt Russell, because, you know, they've risked their careers, but they're such big stars and they're secure. And a good friend of mine is Scott Baio, who I'm sure you know, and he's spoken and he's risked everything. But I love that he stands up for her, and I love being his friend and his wife, Renee. And he puts on a golf tournament that I play in every year, except they didn't have it last year. This year, because of the Wuhan virus, the China virus, as I call it. And a lot of conservative actors play in that tournament. So, you know, for anonymity, I'm going to keep their names out of it. But Scott's always been very vocal, and I'm very, very supportive of him. So that's pretty much the story of why I decided to do this.
Well, thank you for the background and the information. Let me start here. This is something interesting. I don't know if you know or not, but I actually lived most of my life in America, in Los Angeles, California. I want to say probably 12 years out of 19 years. And I moved out of LA. I had my share of being involved with, I'm using the air quote with my fingers, Hollywood, when I worked for Paramount Pictures Studios as a still photographer on set. And I did some acting and modeling and all that stuff when I was young and stupid. But I do remember the reason I faded away. They never fired me technically, but then suddenly I wasn't getting any calls to show up on sets as photographer. It was exactly in around 2012 when I was, first of all, publicly speaking out against Islam. And then also when the second round of, you know, Obama won, at a meeting, at a launch meeting, my uncontrollable tongue just rolled out, oh, by the way, I guess he's got four more years to destroy America furthermore. Literally after that launch meeting, I just suddenly they did not have any need for a still photographer. Suddenly done. Again, to this day,
of course,
I haven't been fired.
Of course it's going to be that way.
Exactly. They don't necessarily fire you. To just say, I still actually have my employee card to go into the building, but I never got a call. Now, the reason I'm going this long with the question is you mentioned the blacklist and, you know, a lot of conservatives. Yes, I actually met a lot of not just actors, but directors and producers and executive producers in just that building of, you know, the whole environment. Paramount Picture, a lot of them who are conservatives, but closeted conservative because they don't want to be blacklisted. And that's the thing. I want you to give your point of view, because I remember when me and you were working on title of this episode, you said, I still do my work, but I've been attacked. So my question, I guess, for you is, as far as Hollywood is concerned, have you been blacklisted? Have you been pushed on the side without, of course, being fired by them?
Yes, in several different ways. And what's funny when you mention that about, like, your car taken away, when, you know, and when Trump started running, of course, I got my Trump button and my Trump hat, and I would wear it proudly around town in L.A. and Hollywood, and I lived in the Valley. So I would go to Starbucks, and I'd sit up front with some of my conservative friends, and then people would come out of Starbucks, and they would go, you have a lot of guts wearing that hat around here. And some would be kind of antagonistical, but this one kind of tattooed rocker chick said, I got to give you props because you have a lot of guts wearing that here. And she kind of meant it almost like a tribute in a kind of way. But I was like, oh, thanks, I guess. And I said, you know, I'm not afraid to just stand out. You know, we still are free as far as I know so far. But, yeah, as far as some of the other situations I've been, like here's an example. And it's not just being a conservative and being a Trump supporter. And then we'll get into also the involvement I have with Islam in Islamabad, New York, because I did a documentary and exposed that. But I would be kind of just talking to different people, and then I was talking to my agent, and they said National Lampoon called. The company kind of still exists. There was so much in the 2000s that happened to it. But they said that they were interested in having me come back to write some films and maybe redo the magazine, you know, rebuild the brand. But then when they found out what era I worked for them and the fact that I'm a middle-aged white guy, they said that they do not want me to work there. They would rather have – I mean, diversity is like killing the industry too. It's not anything about creativity anymore. It's about what kind of minority you are or what kind of gender you are, that Hollywood is – that's why Hollywood is kind of in the state it is. But, yeah, they would not even talk. I mean, they didn't even mention the fact that I was a Trump supporter then. But they said that because I was white and middle-aged, that even if I was the funniest man on the planet, that they wouldn't hire me. And it's kind of been the same way with that. So, yeah, I went after some of the liberals on Twitter. I mean, I don't care. I knew Obama was going to be the start of the end for us. Until Trump got in, you know, with everything that happened between inflation, the peace accord, some name for that, and what he did with Iraq and stuff and sending billions of dollars over there to help the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and stuff like that. So I thought, okay, you know, this is not something that I want to deal with on that level, but I'm not going to cower to it and stuff. So, yeah, there were jobs that people wouldn't hire me for. And I, as I mentioned before, I don't care as far as that goes. I mean, I'm surviving. Yes, I probably could have had more work, but I'm staying true to myself. And that's a good thing about independent financing and independent media and doing your own projects. There's so many outlets now for it. And if one clicks, then it's great. I mean, I don't go to a place and go, oh, hi, I'm a conservative and a Trump supporter. Will you back me? I just let the word come out. And if they happen to discover that I'm a conservative, then I'll just say, yeah, why should that affect the work? I mean, you know, if someone is a Democrat, I'm not going to say, oh, you're the worst piece of crap in America and I'm not going to ever work with you. We don't do that as a conservative Republican. And sadly, you know, it's because of – it's kind of similar to what's happening in Afghanistan where, you know, people are cowering. And it's just like, okay, you don't have to necessarily announce what you're doing, but you can't let the other side win. I'm sorry, but, you know – I will also go to my grave knowing that Biden stole this last election. And I know if any of the media is out there listening, the mainstream, I know they'll probably say, oh, he's full of ass and stuff because of how everyone says it's just bogus and that Trump was full of it because, you know, and then he incited January 6th riots because of it and to try to overturn the election and the certification of everything. So I really think that it was stolen. So I'm entitled to my opinion, and I really think that that's the case. But so many people will not stand up to the other side, and that's partly why we're in this situation. And it's really sad that people just their heads in the sand and don't see what's going on. It's the same as how I feel about what Islam is doing. Everyone says, oh, it's, you know, and I know your story and what you went through was so hard and tragic and horrible, and I'm so grateful that you were able to come here and be a voice. But, you know, people look at me and they go like, oh, you're just paranoid, you're delusional, or you're just a conspiracy theorist. And I go, well, there's some facts, you know, based in conspiracies. No one just comes out without, you know, some sort of background facts. Same with, like, stereotypes. Like, as a comedian and a comedy writer, people are so afraid to just say what it is, like, oh, you can't insult one thing or another. I'm sorry, I grew up in New Jersey, and yes, Italians have a reputation, and they are like that. Jewish people, too. My Jewish side, I'm also a Christian, and Christians the same thing. And Asians and Indians definitely ran fast convenience stores. Like, you would go in there and you'd go, hello, how can I help you? You know, don't touch the merchandise. If you want to buy it. Otherwise, get out of the store. So, like, when The Simpsons did it, it's true. It really, really happens. And in comedy, you have to do that. And so many comedians are not doing this. And now in comedy with the, but the thing is, it's okay if you're like a Muslim comic or black. I did a show at Flappers in Burbank, California a few years back, and I was one of the only white comics, and there were Muslim comics there, and then a half-Muslim audience. And the Muslim comics, all they talked about was killing white people and how funny that would be. And I'm going, that's the kind of comedy that we have now. So... But I really, like, went after him. I said, oh, okay, hi, I just got back from a bar mitzvah, and boy, am I spelt. And then I said, I have yarmulkes for everybody if you want to feel the experience. And the white audience and the black audience laughed, but the Muslim audience was ready to kill me. So I joked at the end. I said, thank you very much, and if anyone's interested in talking, I'll be in the parking lot in the Israeli-made car. And... Oh, my God, you should have seen the jaws drop after that. It was so funny.
But that's the thing. The double standards are definitely there, and I would agree. I'm a big supporter of freedom of speech. I don't want to censor any side. I want everybody to have a chance to tell their side. I want everybody to have the right to voice their opinion. We don't have that right now. Of course, our side needs to be silenced. The other side gets, you know, amplified, and they get megaphones to be louder. But I agree with what you said also. There are more than enough conservative, closeted conservatives within the Hollywood industry to create their own industry and walk away, which will break Hollywood. At least it will reduce the power of Hollywood, if you call it. But we don't do that. I was actually talking to a friend of mine. There's a project I'm working on, and you'd be amazed to just look at how many TV series have either added budgets or removed a character and replaced their characters with their budget with a Muslim character in a show so their show would continue going on air. Examples are such as NCIS Los Angeles, which was one of my favorite shows, but then it was all about showing the Islamic Jihad attack on our soil, but then they brought this, you know, Muslim hijab very character who's the nice Muslim who's helping everybody, is the best at it, you know, the narrative of Hollywood. Because right. They were about to lose their show, instead of standing up and saying, okay, cancel the show, as you said, there aren't that many people who are willing to survive. They want to have that comfortable paycheck. They want to have that comfortable client. They want to make sure they have their life, especially those in LA, because you both know cost of living in LA is not a joke. You have to have a very solid paycheck for that.
Which is ironic because they want their paychecks, and yet they think they're living in this, like, utopia. But look at the crap they've created. It's kind of like a paradox of irony that they want to be so woke, and it's such a minority of people that they're catering to and placating to. And yet, you know, look, there's homeless everywhere in L.A. The crime has risen. You have Gascon, who's one of the most pathetic people to ever get appointed as district attorney or elected as district attorney. And the people, that's it. They still don't get it. I mean, my district was Adam Schiff, where I lived, and
wow.
Then Brad Sherman. And I'm going like, oh, great. And people that I knew in Burbank still did not get it because they're walking around like zombies thinking that, oh, yes, we can't offend anybody, kumbaya. And I'm going, you know what? You guys are going to suffer. One of the things that always frustrated me is, like, and people would come back later, and so even when producers, even before all the political stuff, they would go, oh, you're one of the best writers in L.A., blah, 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 you know, an amazing cartoonist, we want to do your projects, but we're doing something, like, with the woke thing. We have to have the diversity and things. And then their projects fail horribly. And then they come back with their tails between their legs going, oh, I wish we had invested in yours. We would have been on top. But then they don't have any money anymore. And it's such a constant story. And it's so frustrating. But in response to what you were saying about, like, the conservative Hollywood speaking up, Antonio Sabato Jr. is starting his own conservative production company. I mean, he's kind of restricting his movies right now to Christian movies, and I think that depending on how he gets it distributed, I think it's limiting him a little bit because he loves my writing, and, you know, I have family movies and kids movies and comedies and things that are an animation and things like that. But it does limit the audience. So, I mean, I wish him the best success with it. And he's not afraid to speak out. But I don't know how much money he has. I think he's still trying to raise money. That's the other thing. For me right now is I've had two shows on Amazon recently, and I'm working on adapting my children's book into an animated feature, and I'm working on funding right now. So that's a big thing. And I know there's conservative investors out there, and I, you know, if some are in your audience, that would be awesome, because I do have also outlets for distribution. But they're fun. They're actually, I mean, they're not really like political thing. I mean, I just saw Free Guy, and I thought, oh my gosh. And I thought, because Ryan Reynolds did one of our movies at National Lampoon, Van Wilder, and I really like him, but this whole movie has become one big woke fest. There's, like, using white privilege, Black Lives Matter, you know, gay transgender issues and things like that. And, you know, it's fine, but they're pushing it on us in these movies, and it's limiting. And I'm sorry, I never had white privilege. I had to work for every freaking thing that I've ever accomplished in my life. You know, my agents didn't even get me the stuff that I got. I went out and I got all of this on my own. Every accomplishment, Raymond, the National Lampoon, working at Tiger Beat, MTV, Nickelodeon, I got those. No one else helped me get those. I went from door to door to door, even as a musician. I was playing in bands and things like that. I went out and did it. So I don't know where this white privilege is coming from. And the fact that all these white people, and like Drew Brees and other people, remember a few years ago when they were kneeling and actually cleaning the shoes of black people? I'm like, God. Get off your freaking knees. It's so embarrassing. And then the fact that we have to pay reparations for things that happened 200 years ago.
Dave, never a race card has worked in the history unless the other group who are being accused of racism bowed into it. They somehow thought if we show how racist we are not, it's going to solve the problem. That's one of the things a lot of white Americans do. And I say this because I have talked to them, asked them, do you really think you have white privilege? Do you really think you're a racist? They're like, no. But if I show them I'm not, that's going to solve the problem. Like, no, you see, this is a narrative. It's not a reality. It's a narrative. When you start playing into their narratives, then they will turn that against you in a different way and continue on with this division that Obama started, and we are continuing it now.
Yeah, there is nothing worse than, and this is any predator, when they see weakness, they attack it, and this is as predatory as you can get. What Obama did, what is going on now with Biden, and I have other names for him besides Sleepy Joe, but I'm going to keep it clean today. But yes, it is so obvious. And, you know, when they say silent majority, remember they were doing that during the election, and I'm going, that is the problem. Staying silent is what did it. When those observers during the count, like in those swing states, just, and all the videos out there showing that they did not do anything. They did not, when they weren't allowed back into the counting rooms where all the liberals were counting, those sudden appearing overnight mail-in ballots, which we know is like totally illegal. They were making up the election as they were going along. None of them stood up. It was like, oh, okay, well, we'll just stand outside and trust you, or we'll stand 50 feet away and trust that you're counting legitimate votes. They never got attorneys to come and go in, but it was okay for when liberals and liberal cities were able to just do whatever they want, nonchalant, attack people, set up autonomous zones. Right now, gangs have gotten where, like, MS-13, Islamic gangs, are taking over areas of Atlanta and other cities because they saw what happened in Seattle and Portland, and they're going, oh, well, they weren't organized. No, they were just a bunch of liberals who thought they knew what they were doing, but we're an organized cartel of gangs, and we know how to make these things go with intimidation, but we're also well-organized, which is why, and one of the reasons I wanted to do the documentary on Islamberg and what's going on there around the country.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I'm glad you brought this up. I was going to say I want to make sure we talk about this before we run out of time on the segment today. But before you explain why you did it, please tell our audience about your documentary and the fact that from what you told me, no festival would even touch it. So tell us about the documentary, also if there's anywhere for people to find it and watch it, and then go ahead and give us the reason of why you did it.
Oh, okay. Well, when AOC and Tlaib and Omar Grassley and all of that squad and everything started getting the power, I was so aware, and I've always been aware that one of the biggest reasons for Islam permeating everywhere around the world, you know, not just that it's I love how people say that it's a race. No, it's an ideology, a religion, but they try to use that because they think that people look a little different. Well, anyway, I was starting to see factions, and this is what they do. The biggest way of invasion is from the interior, of taking over and transmogrifying. So I've always seen that besides the border, people were coming in and moving into districts and taking over those districts, and that's how you get someone into government. You know, they were smart enough to move into a place like in Minnesota or upstate New York to be able to have the ability to vote. And when you have masses of certain people voting for them, they're going to get in, and that's when you can change Congress. That's when you can change the government. So I was approached by – I was talking to a friend of mine who came over from Russia, and her daughter is an actor-singer that I worked with. And I said, I'm sick of what's going on. I said, this is going to be the biggest invasion of America. It's not going to be – you know, and after 9/11, when people just started getting, you know – back into their little safe worlds and they're just sort of like away from all of this and they didn't even think about it. It's like out of sight, out of mind. I said, yeah, I want to do something. So She backed me to do the documentary. There was a biker gang, believe it or not, in New Jersey that was going up to Islamburg, New York to kind of check out what's going on. There was a big press conference going up there. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this documentary and I'm going to see what I could find out. Well, I went up there with some cameras, got this cameraman who wound up being a big wimp, and he got scared by Islamburg, and I went with the biker gang, found out what they were doing. We did kind of like a travel log with it. And then I did some drone footage over it. And they vetted me. They knew I was coming. They knew who I was, the people of Islamburg, New York. And I know that, in fact, that it's a training center. And everyone's talked about it, even a couple, you know, Fox has talked about it. Bill O'Reilly has been on top of it. And I've been trying to get to him to talk to him about it. But what I discovered there was very interesting. So the people from the state troopers who were there allowing me to go and shoot, they are so afraid of the people in Islamburg, New York. And I know it started in Brooklyn, New York. And one of the Muslim Brotherhood leaders that was part of I don't know. I think he was sort of an offshoot of 9/11, but they started just building up these little factions in these small towns, and then it became where, like, there were training centers all over the country, in Texas, Minnesota, even out in Nevada and things like that. So I was exposing all that, and when I did the short thing, and then when I showed a rough cut to the cameraman, he wanted his name taken off. Because he said it's all full of crap and blah, blah, blah. I didn't know I was going to approach it that way. And by the way, he was a terrible cameraman. So I tried to just do the best with it. And so it wound up being kind of like one of those cool guerrilla underground short films. And, yeah, I submitted to festival. They said because of the subject matter, I couldn't get into the festivals. So I wound up putting it online. And then, you know, people have been kind of taking to that. So it's in a few places online. It's on Vimeo right now. That's like the number one place you can see it. It's called Ask Me If I Care, C-A-R-E, which is kind of like a variation of C-A-I-R, you know, the organization.
Ask Me If I Care is the name?
Yeah, C period, A period, R period, E. And it was kind
Got
of
it.
Like my spoof of C period, A period, R period, E period. I mean, I period, R period.
Yes, care. I have covered care a lot, and most of my audience are familiar with the terrorist organization doing business for Hamas as CARE, which I was actually, I was thinking the other day that if you notice, well, of course, our administration is missing at the moment. Everything going on in Afghanistan with Taliban, and I mean, everybody's taking a vacation apparently at the White House because they have turned
Including
on
Ghani.
Their
what
auto reply.
Right. What does Ghani do? No wonder, you know, the country is in shambles and stuff. You have the president who's running scared and he goes, oh, this is best for Afghanistan is for me to leave so the Taliban can take over. And the fact that none of all these years of us training the Afghanistan armies to stand up for themselves, and then we leave and suddenly they throw the guns down. And how stupid are people that, of course, the Taliban, all the terrorist groups are going to pick up the guns that are left and all the ammunition. You know, you see every action movie when someone killed, the hero comes and picks up the gun because then you're going to have another gun. So to think that that's not going to be turned over, the tanks, whatever, you know, people are so stupid. I'm sorry, it's just, I think that's why the country and the world is in the state they're in, is because people have gotten so stupid, and it's been building up because look at our schools, look at all the race theories that they're trying to invoke, all of the wokeness and the things like that. It's, and I've been warning people for years, And now it's coming to pass. They think I'm just some sort of paranoid idiot, you know, that's just saying, oh, you know, you're just being moronic and you're just being over paranoid. Oh, they're not going to take over. We're not going to have more wars. Biden's going to save us. Trump was the problem. And I'm going, you know what? I said the California's going to become the way it is. Everyone thought no one believes me. It's just like, oh, just go away. No one's going to listen to you anyway. And here it's happening.
Well, they have normalized the situation. A lot of people, a lot of average people of every country, they are so used to this situation that it's not as shocking as it used to be. It has become part of the culture, something I've been screaming for years now, to stop normalizing this barbaric cult, but it's been normalized. And also there's that group of people who are always waiting for someone else to save them. So they're just going to sit there and wait for, as you said, either Biden or somebody else to save them. It's never bad enough until it's literally at their door.
Right, but their ignorance is not helping the situation. You know, they're all, you know, their cowardice and their head in the sand complacency is not helping us. They can, you know, all the reasoning that we could give out towards it is not solving the problem. And, you know, it's always the, oh, too late, you know, now we can't do anything about it for me, always been a horrible excuse, or I'll do it tomorrow excuse, or anything like that. And I'm going like, this is why the world has problems. And they go, oh, and I love the other one where they say, oh, well, we won't be around for that. Like, that'll be 10, 15, 20 years in the future. Kind of the same way everyone thinks that, you know, going electric and that, you know, we need to check on the environment because it's all our fault. Like, one, people are so stupid, they don't even know that that lithium needs to be mined by gas, and the lithium farms are limited supply. So when you have all these batteries and you think that people are going to want to just stop after a six-hour drive and charge their car, which takes like 10 hours now, you know, it's going to be a cluster. In the next few years, it's going to make what's happening now look tame in, by standards. So, and then I really think there's going to be, you know, look what's happened with the Taliban. And they don't think that it's going to come back here to America. There's going to be more terrorists here on domestic soil. And I'm really concerned about that. And people still say I'm paranoid over that, too.
Well, I guess what people don't, as far as Taliban or terrorism goes, what people don't understand is every single one of these Islamic terror groups, including my motherland regime, they all have this one goal in common, which is to take down the great Satan. When they say great Satan, that's America. They have to take America down. Because there is no way they can conquer and have their global caliphate as long as great Satan exists. So people don't make that connection. Yes, I agree with you. There are more than enough IRGC, Taliban, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda operatives within America that if they get the green light, we will have dramatically increased of jihad attacks in America. But yes, when we say it, it sounds paranoid. You're paranoid, and I'm just an Islamophobe with a couple of bad experiences. And I'm going to use this as a hook to exactly this is why I'm very happy you're running. I really think most of Americans who have the knowledge and have the means and love America should start running for office, because the reason we are in such a fragile state inside the country is because of those who are in offices. This isn't just Joe Biden. This isn't Biden administration. This is beyond that. This is every corner at every state, local, federal, everybody in there. We either have Democrats who will push for disruption of America, or we have rhinos who don't have the backbone to stand up, do something. So we need people who care for America to start taking their seats. Now, on that note, why don't you go into a little bit of detail of your platform, issues you'll be addressing, hopefully comes you winning. Just give us more detail about your campaign and what are you running for exactly.
Okay, great. Well, before I do that, looking at the succession of what's going on in Washington, you know, if Biden's gone, look who we get. We get Harris. If Harris gone, it's Pelosi. Then it's Schumer. You look at the rundown of succession of what's going on, it's going to be really – there aren't any real great successors in that that chain of what's going on in Washington. As far as where I am, yes, West Virginia is a predominantly red state. We do have Capito, who's Republican, and then Manchin, who is the Democrat. But thank goodness he's a moderate, and he's the one that's been kind of keeping the Senate from going really off the deep end. But I'm running because delegates for state are a little different than national because we deal just with state issues. There really isn't anything federally I could do. But within the state, I was told there's so many problems here that the delegate that's in there now, David Kelly, is doing nothing to really help the local economy to do things for the district. He's primarily doing things just for himself down in Charleston, which is the capital. So when I was asked to run, I said, okay, I want to do something for here. We have horrible – talk about infrastructure. Where I live, it's one of the worst infrastructured areas. We have horrible roads. They're creating things, and when they do decide to patch things, it's just horrible patches at the wrong time of year. The ingredients that they use and the materials are just not enough to keep it going. Businesses are leaving left, right, and center. We have so many few businesses in Sistersville where I live, and there's nothing for people really to do. They just sort of exist in a malaise of just existing and not living. And that's the sad thing. When people get in that situation, they don't have anything to look forward to. So they just keep voting the same people in because they know their name. You know, in the small town and small counties where I am, that's it. You know, you have families who are ingrained in this area, and they keep voting them in, and then nothing gets done. You know, you might have a picnic or something or a 4th of July thing, but there's nothing to boost the economy here. There's nothing to improve the roads, and that's what I want to do on a district level. So my campaign is to basically create situations and not limit them or decrease them. And that's what I'm running on, whether I win or lose, whether I can convince people, being the newcomer here, you know, I've been here almost 2 years, to do something, then that's what I'm going to do. There's still people that are pushing against things. Like, you can't even hold a demonstration because it's such – in small towns, the town councils are so ingrained with people who grew up here. You know, like, people wanting to do demonstrations are afraid to, especially here because there's a lot of good old boys. They're afraid that, something might happen to them because everyone here has guns. They're afraid to talk up. So I'm working with this one guy named Alex King who had run for delegate before, and he lost to the incumbent, to David Kelly. And actually, he was there January 6th in the Capitol, but he didn't go into the Capitol, but he actually drove out there, and if I wasn't sick, I was going to go with him. But he saw everything that was going on. So he's actually someone that's standing up against the locals. So he's a backer for me, and he's been really helpful with, you know, local politics and dealing with what the people are like here. So he's been very valuable. But I'm running so that maybe this could be a leapfrog to something bigger politically. But I think once I get in, then my voice will be able to do a lot more than just, you're a guy from Hollywood, great, we know who you are. But why should we listen to anything you say? So if I can get people in, I say, you know what, I'm doing this because I care. That is the campaign that I'm running on is doing things like that because I do care. I live in this area too. And one of my campaign slogans is solving problems, not creating them. Because it's all about revitalization. Because you can't do anything if you don't want to, and if no one wants to build in their area. When Biden closed down the pipeline, it affected West Virginia. It affected the district I live in because oil and gas is one of the biggest economy industries here in this part of West Virginia. Same with coal. So he destroyed so many jobs. So many people went on unemployment. And the other thing I'm concerned about is I hate socialism. And that's the other thing people are so ignorant about is that you keep this up, you keep getting your stimulus check, you keep not working, you keep, you know, keeping your kids at home over this pandemic, then we're going to be worse than Venezuela. We're going to be worse than the Middle East. We're going to be worse than Russia. We're going to be worse than China and Korea, North Korea. So that's the other thing. And I'm just going out there talking to people, trying to go, do you want to keep living like this? Do you want your house? And one of the other things that's so horrible around here is that houses are just being destroyed. You know, no one's taking care of them. There's not enough money for upkeep. People just live day to day, and their yards are horrible. Yes, there's so many beautiful things out here, too. I'm along the Ohio River, and there's so many beautiful mansions and Victorians that used to be show places. People would come here. There was so much money in this part of West Virginia before I moved here, but when all of this oil and gas disappear, now people are moving. They can't afford to live anywhere. And they said, well, you can't afford to go to California. That's outrageous. And you can't go to New York. So I want to do something to revitalize the area. There have been a couple of people that have moved into the area and kind of bought up these properties. I kind of call them like land barons, like the way they used to. And then they monopolize the town. And that's not helping either because there's one guy who moved in and he bought up a bunch of places and he opened up a couple of shops and then he bought some commercial properties and he's charging exorbitant rents for small businesses and they're not moving in because they can't afford the monthly rents that they're charging here and there's not enough people with money to buy goods like that. So there's storefronts all over this area that are closed. And that's part of the problem, too. So I want to do that. And if it can make this district, this area, a show place where people can come in and revitalize, then it'll spread. It'll spread to the rest of West Virginia. It'll spread maybe to the rest of the country. And I want West Virginia to be a show place. I'm living here now, and I don't want to live in a place that's nothing but dilapidated rural slums. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running.
Well, I can say personally, I do appreciate what you're doing. I understand you may not, I mean, running for a state, you may not be able to do anything federally. But imagine if every town, from small to big, would have someone caring who would run and try to fix the problem within that town. Then we wouldn't even need half of what a lot of states and towns think they need federal government for. I never claim to know much about politics. That is not my genre. But I always say one of the reasons the federal government has taken so much power and they have so much control over the nation is because on a state level, representatives are failing their people. If it would change that to where people like you who care for the town, not just because you leave there, because it's part of America. You know, this cliche thing, people are like, oh, Minnesota is gone. Oh, California is gone. Oh, Michigan is gone. What do you mean it's gone? This is still part of America. We got to care for every single part of this nation if they're going to claim to be Americans. So I do appreciate what you're doing. And I thank everyone, as I said before, I asked you to explain your platform and campaign. I think everybody in every town, red or blue, doesn't matter. We need to start cleaning up locally and then build up to stages of federal positions, and the pushback will play a huge role. On that note, Dave, tell my audience where they can go to follow you, support you, whatever it is they can get behind you. Just give us places that we can go and get informed as far as what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate everything that you're doing and standing up. And as we said, we got to stop, you know, fortunately so far here, and because what Biden's doing is bringing everybody over the border, and that's including, you know, terrorists, drug cartels, gang members. They've been dropping them off all over the country, including here in West Virginia. And I think people, you know, if there's a moderate Democrat, please wake the friggin' up and start doing something. If you really care about America and not just your party and politic party, be aware of what's going on in your neighborhoods with gangs, with terrorist sects that seem to be popping up, no-go zones. And you know, people in California and New York seem to forget that they call it the flyover states, but it's America. They forget that there is something between there, and they're not realizing. They're just going, oh, they're just places we can go shoot a film, or we could just sort of, you know, make fun of. As far as mine, I'm on Facebook. I've been banned from Twitter, and numerous times I created a character called Bitchy the Clown, which is on. It's a podcast I did with an embittered conservative clown from New Jersey, and he really speaks his mind. And you can find him on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and other platforms. But if you go to my website, snuggybear.com, snuggybear.com, that's where you can find all the projects, my bio, things about me, things I'm working on. I don't put my political stuff on there. On Facebook, if you go to Dave Shelton for West Virginia Delegate, District 6, and you'll be able to find all about my political stuff there. I'm supposed to be putting on a golf tournament September 11th in honor of the people we lost, veterans and first responders here in Sistersville. I'm still looking for sponsors. Sadly, you know, the complacency around here, I haven't gotten anybody to sign up for it yet because they're like, okay, we'll do it, but you know, there's no guarantee. So I would love to find sponsors. It's not very expensive, and there's opportunities on the Facebook page to do that, or they can contact me through my regular Facebook page. I do Instagram under IMA_gargoyle, but I don't really do too much there. It's mostly just for appearances. Facebook or my website is probably the best way they can get hold of me. There's also, and then there's links to my email there too and stuff. So that's probably the best way. It would be through Messenger on Facebook if they're interested.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again, Dave. All the best to you while running. Let me know if there's anything I can help, and we will hopefully get you
getting
in
the
that
word
position.
Out is, right, getting the word out and having them get in contact with me is the best way. Because I need to, in order for me to put up even a campaign in this part of the country, in West Virginia, I still need backing. I have like a campaign manager and an account and everything, but there's also, I set up a new email, and if they get hold of me on Facebook, they can probably do that. Let me see if really fast if I can pull up that email. Because we just established it, and I want, you know, your listeners to be able to get to that. Oh, here we go. It is. Dave Shelton for Delegate at gmx.com. So that's my official email for the campaign, so they can also contact me through there. So Dave Shelton for Delegate at gmx.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dave, for coming on with us today, and hopefully we get you back for some more updates.
Pleasure. And please, anything I could do to help you to get the word out as well, count on me. If you ever do like a rally or something, I will so be there.
I will absolutely stay in touch with you. I appreciate that. And to our lovely audience, we are almost out of time. Thank you so much for staying with us today. Thank you for sharing this episode. And remember, our September 11th project is still ongoing. So if you want to be part of it, go to liveuptofreedom.com. On the homepage, click the black button that says 9/11 Project. All the details are there. Thank you so much. I will talk to you all next Monday, same time, same channel. You all stay safe and goodbye.